Scavengers. Swap my hand away. Look under my eyelids. On my neck. Searching for Legion ink. A distress signal has been sent to your employer. A distress signal has been sent to your employer. Fear. Bickering. A child's body dragged out. Limp. Heavy cutting laser. Going to help me. Cut the hull away. Free me. Smell roasting meat. Mouth waters. Feel pressure. Look down. My hip. But no leg. Where is my leg? Volga, help me! I fall out of the horror, back into the shell of my body. Incomprehensible agony radiates from the interior of my right thigh. The rest of me doesn't move. Rejecting the artificial tissue, the words slither through the thick wool of my brain. My ring is gone. I look down at my body, or try to look. The body is naked, pinned to a table like a vivisected frog. My right leg is skinless, synthetic meat from the hip down. Green, webby fibers spasm over translucent bone. Artificial vessels worm in fleshy strands. An emaciated human with 200 glass eyes affixed to his head, hunches near my feet, spinning membrane. Someone screams. I think it's me. Massive coronary agitation. Withdrawal, complication. Keep him alive. A voice rumbles beyond the light. Your queen wills it. Sedative. I drift into the dark. It's warmer than I expected. There's a boy there, on a raft, his hands behind his head, his skin freckled from the sun. He floats off a shadowy shore, watching a big sky, not one collared by metal towers, but dusted with stars and stretching the horizon. All I want is to float there with him, to smell the salt, to lie in that cradle as the sea rocks us to sleep. The moon pulses in the sky like an atomic dilation, drawing me up into its gravity. No, 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 no. Chop 'em if they're taller, stomp 'em if they're smaller, mauler, brawler, legacy hauler. Chanting in the tunnel to light. A girl stands over me, her hatchet face pulled into a sneer, a scalpel glints in her hand. She holds it over my throat. My memories, my life, my guilt return, and I push my throat up into the metal. Go on, slick. Give me a nick. I laugh when she can't. Never comes when you want it to. The laughter won't screw off. I scramble for the Z-valve inside. It ain't there. The laughs turn to sobs till I'm bawling like a softfoot. Waking first night in his bunk to find his arse getting torn up by a line of leatherneck triarii fresh in from killing moonies. I crank and crank on the Z-valve. Volga'll be dead by now, dead like the scar hunters I trained. Rest of my freelance team's toe tags. Sera, that greedy idiot. Dano, poor pickpocket kid I made into a real operator. Dead by association. Fuck me. Where's my fucking ring? Takes me a while to realize I'm shouting it. I thrash against the restraint. When the tears dry up enough for me to actually see, the girl's gone. The boy's replaced her. So, he's alive. Well, that feels good. Got a nasty scar that's going to take some healing from his right eye to his left jaw. I crack a smile that splits my dry lips. Hey, kid. Tin Man. He dangles my engagement ring on the end of a chain. Been watching out for it. Good lad. Give it here. He doesn't. I spot the med bank behind him. Look at all that dope. Bottles and canisters and packages. Oh, my. Where are we? Mars. Mars, huh? So, kid, need you to do old Tin Man a favour. Got some joints, need oiling. Got a condition, you know, hard life and all. Maybe Zoladone? Might be some in the med bank back there. He doesn't move. Just a little panel to take the edge off. Liquid Z ain't kill juice. That zombie shit's all propaganda. Helps me with my demons. He just watches. Come on now, come on. I ain't going nowhere. No. Little rich shit. Saved your arse from a pillaging. Get some Z. Don't do me like this. I'll eat your fucking heart. He steps back. Come on, hey. I try to smile. Hey, I didn't mean it was a joke. My laugh comes out as a bark. Goz, you're tight as Juno's cunt. We made a good team back there. But you gotta have my six. It'll calm me down. Had an operation, see? Please, please, little man. December 16th, 737 PCE. Huh? 4. Tour me Nicare of Legio 13 Dracones, the best of Flavinius's Praetorians, were given orders by Aja Algrimus to assassinate reformers in the government in a coordinated purge. One squad visited the Hesperia Gardens, an illegal house of torture. Before insertion, they were given their standard opcocks. What they didn't know was that their customary stimulants had been replaced with Zoladone. Upon insertion, the kill squad received new orders that even Aja knew her prized dragoons would find difficult. Freed from empathy by the Zoladone, the dragoons followed their orders and butchered 75 men, women, and children guilty not of sedition, but of enduring a life of sexual torture and possessing compromising information on loyal members of the ruling regime, including Atalantia Algrimus. Afterwards, the dragoons melted their victims with hydroxic acid. Even the children. I know this already, but the judgment of a child is a horrible thing. It was his race that gave the order, not mine. When Trig T. Nakamura came off the Zoladone High, Holiday found him with a gun in his mouth. She encouraged him to seek Ares to make up for the blood on his hands. This according to her testimony on... I thrash forward at him. Things that'd make an ironclad leatherneck with 6 rain badges turn her head and blink, pour out of my mouth. Slides off packs like he's on the Z himself. Do you want to live like a zombie when they made him one? He holds up the ring. This ring belongs to Ephraim T. Horn. When he asks for it back, I'll give it to him. Gives you the right, I snarl, spoil little... You asked for Z before you asked for Volga, he snaps. But you risk your life for her? You're an addict, Tin Man. If you refuse to hold yourself to account, I'll do it for you. Jove knows you don't have anyone else. I lie awake screaming at him long after his footsteps echo away. Soon, I grow too tired. In the silence, memories of Trig hunt me down. Volga soon joins. In the cacophony, I revert to all I know, and from my lips seeps the old footfuck creed. Veterans screamed into my face as we marched, until it was drilled into our grey matter to replace human vertebrae with titanium chain links. I whisper as I fall asleep. Chop 'em if they're taller. Stomp 'em if they're smaller. Mauler, brawler, legacy hauler. Smoke that crow earned this holler. Mauler, brawler, legacy hauler. Smoke that ant, pay off your collar. Legio, Eterna. Victrix! One more time, you fucking dogs. Mauler, brawler, legacy hauler. Chapter 22. Ephraim. Unshorn. I wake in a large four-poster. Light seeps through pale blue curtains. How long have I been out? There's an IV pumping saline into me. My stomach rumbles as I pull it out. The itch of the Zolodone hunger has morphed from rabies-infected rage beast to small dog. It pisses in the corner and squeaks out a bark. I ignore it for now. Kid visited, didn't he? Has my ring. Has Trig's story. That uppity brat. Gods, my head aches. Right leg itches too, like it's made of Venusian acid ants. I toss off the blankets to reveal my legs. The artificial muscles and sinew are now covered by a new growth of pale skin that mismatches with my darker left leg. It's fancy tech, well muscled already. Puckered pink flesh makes a knot on my mid-torso where Gorgo's rail slug passed through the Duke of Hands and then into me. More pink flesh makes a finger-long ridgeline on my forearm where it broke in the crash. I peek under my medical shorts. Hello, old boy. Glad you're still around. I wiggle the toes. Nerves are already calibrated. No phantom pain, except a weird ache in my chest. Only get work this good if you got the patronage of a rich house. But I ain't rich. I ain't a crusader. So qui solvente? Who's paying? Where's Volga? Where am I? I push open the curtains. The suite is expansive and fit for a brooding but secretly sensitive night from a holocan drama. Stone walls and floor, expensive rugs, a hearth fit to dance in. A pair of fuzzy pink slippers sit by the bedside, along with an Arctic bear cloak. Someone thinks they're hilarious. I slip both on and go to a wooden door punctured by beams of sunlight. I'm blinded as I push it open. A wash of cool air whips in. I wrap the coat tighter and step out onto the terrace. Covered with spots of snow and topiaries, an expanse of stone pushes to a low stone balustrade, covered thick with flowering vines of green and silver. Beyond that is a sight to see. In the first year of the Battle of Luna, my boys and I were hunting some gold gladiator impresario when the building adjacent to ours was struck by a termite munition. When the dust cleared, a gold woman stood in the ruins of her block empire, an arm missing from the elbow down, body fleeced of skin and all the blueprints underneath vivid as traffic arteries. She swayed there, tilting her chin upward at us, as if to say, "Witness my glory, peasants." She bled out instead of accepting our help. The ruins of the Martian city of Olympia remind me of that woman. Beautiful, regal, tough as a bare-fisted brawler, and pissed at the world for breaking her perfect nose. I watched on Luna as the Minotaur made his stand here against Cephi, holding out until the Reaper himself came with the bloody seventh to wreak a path of hell all the way to the seat of Bellona and send the Minotaur scurrying like a kicked puppy. What a sight. What a city. But while the war moved on, Olympia didn't. I know her cloud towers fell to become squatter havens west of the city. I can see their humps in the distance. The rest of the old Bellona capital spills against the northwestern lip of the Olympus Mons and shimmies toward Loch Esmeralda in an hourglass shape. Each war-battered kilometer reflecting the architecture of 6 centuries of stately Bellona taste, and it is a fine taste, despite her broken skyline. Only fascists should make cities. Democrats never have a salient thesis. Her air traffic is sparse. Cooking fires twirl from broken buildings. Land traffic congests the northern gates. Markets, overgrown grottos, and old statue parks are filled with bonfires and vagrant tents. People live here, but not well. I turn back toward my room and look up in awe. Eagle Rest, citadel of the fallen Bellona, yawns up the tallest mountain in the solar system. Libraries, government buildings, dancing halls and villas ascend the winter mountain, held up by the wings of a dilapidated stone eagle. What the hell is going on? Why am I here? The old senses are triggered, and I feel someone inside my room. He's not trying to hide. I just didn't see him at first. I thought he was a sofa. One of the biggest men I've ever seen lies on a beast skin in front of my fire, roasting walnuts in the coals with his bare hands, if you can call those hands. The right one is huge and twisted like ginger roots.
"Do you see your fate in the bones, Grania?"
he asks in a low, sibilant voice. He's bald, black-skinned, like many tribes of Mars's North Pole, and incredibly fat. His eyes focus on the coals. I glance to the ajar door.
"A man may run, but none has escaped his fate yet."
"Who are you?" I ask. His eyes scour the room.
"I see his fate. A young eagle's nest was this. To plume his feathers, he went away and met the man around whom all fray. Now he lies in memory's cavern, head a blossom, heart judged by Saturn, on a cold stone floor. He found an early autumn."
He breaks a piping hot walnut shell with his fingers and slurps out the meat as if sucking down an oyster. He's a living tattoo. Bright blue runes swirl across his face, down his bare arms in interlocking patterns. 7 ridiculous rings weigh down the fingers of his left hand with rubies and diamonds. There's nothing left of his ears except keloid-rimmed holes in his head. But what he lacks there, he compensates for with arcane eyebrows, thick enough for dung beetles to disappear behind. Greased leather bags litter a scarlet scale belt underneath a glossy cloak of raven feathers. A shaman. I would see the freaks on occasion in the block wars, charging naked and high on God's bread toward the enemy, with their engorged pricks out like a lance. They were always surrounded by insane spirit warriors called Skoogie. As important to the war bands as the legendary eagle is for a legion, maybe more so. After all, greys don't believe in magic. If he's here, Skoogie will be outside that door. My prey instinct shrieks inside me. In full kit, I'd take the window, but I'm wearing slippers and bear fur, so I sit beside him as he gestures. I'm smaller next to his mass than a 9-year-old grey is to me.
"Your fate not in these bones, Grania?"
He gestures toward the coals. There's bones amongst them. Marrow seeps out of fissures as they heat and crack. Human bones. "Is that an eye socket?" I swallow. They hiss.
"The men that came for you," he says.
"Syndicate?" He nods.
"Thrice on your head so big they lost theirs."
He chuckles.
"Freyhild and the Skoogie castrated them, and once they spoke their truths, fed them to the Sky Queens to make them strong. They had much fun."
Marrow bubbles and trickles down what looks like a femur. The shaman leans toward it, so close his eyebrows begin to curl.
"I have seen your fate in bones, Grania. Sometimes gods speak, but you never know which one. Some play more tricks than others."
"Name's Ephraim, old boy." The eyes slide in his huge head to look sideways at me. He chuckles again.
"Shh! He comes. He likes fear. Show none. Perhaps his wrath will not come undone.
Who? He submerges his whole left hand in the coals, reaching around as if rummaging through a backpack, and pulls out a steaming walnut. This he rips open and shows me the bronzed meat.
Unshorn.
I stand up in sudden panic, almost losing my balance on the untested new leg. It's got some thrust.
Valdir the Unshorn? Be wise, Grannir. The queen's concubine has much power. Little leash.
I look for somewhere to hide. I hear boots, heavy fucking boots. The candles on the wall shiver. A shadow moves in the hall outside the door. Talk rings make an unholy clatter, each taken and melted from the sigils of a fallen gold. They don't even bother with greys.
Silly man. Your destiny is not out the window,
the shaman says without looking up.
But find out for yourself if you must.
I glance down at him. No way he's fast enough to stop me. Nice to meet you, Mr. Shaman. I run out the terrace, my gait uneven on the new leg, my fur coat streaming behind me, and hurl myself over the balustrade. I grab two handfuls of vine and feel them sag under my weight. My feet dangle over a kilometre drop down the snowy cliffs. People always make such drama of heights. Still haven't met one worse than the Unshorn. I climb down the sheer face of the parapet. High altitude wind nips at me. My hands are already going numb. The vines are beginning to fray. A thick stone support column upholds this section of the castle. It too is covered with vines. I shimmy to the right and plant both feet on the stone and shove off, trusting the acrobatics that helped me become a legend of the underworld. Ephraim the reptile, Ephraim the climber, Ephraim the... Oh, shit! I fly straight past the column. My right leg is a freak. When I pushed off, it didn't push. It shot me like a bloody ballista, 3 times as strong as the old one ever was. 2 comma tech, maybe even 3. I'm going to sail out into nothing. I slam into solid stone. Another column. Ah, that hurts. Fingers scramble on burst stone for a grip as I bounce off. I snag one as I fall. The vine begins to unravel. I plummet down, breath stuck in my chest, until I come to an abrupt halt. Skin tears off the palm. But I hold on to the vine for dear life. My slippers drift off into the expanse below. Oh, blight my balls. I've fallen past safe harbour, at the extreme west of the network of support columns. There's nothing beneath but jagged cliffs and twirling snow. My only salvation is to the left, toward the western edge of the foundation of Eagle Rest. It's more than 20 meters away. Not far enough down. I rock myself toward it. The vine sags. Keep at it. Better than Unshorn. I swing in a parabolic arc, not close enough yet. The vine begins to fray. Hold on, vine. I rock back into nothingness, sagging a little. Rock back toward the eagle wing, reach the zenith of my parabolic arc, and let go the vine. Gravity tugs. I fly feet forward, body perfectly horizontal, and then jerk my shoulders back, pull my knees up, twirling into a flip. Stick it, stick it, stick it. Jarring force shoots from my heels into the knees as I land barefoot on the stone. Ha ha! Then I slip on a patch of ice and twist sideways just before a fall that would mean certain death. I scramble to safety, blooded, freezing, and cackling, I glare at the drop and spit. Now, time to descend the cliff face, get to the city, get some shoes, a ship, and get out of Dodge. Do I know anyone in Olympia? Hope not. Syndicate will have a price on my head. Then I hear something in the wind. I look up at the sky. Nothing. I can't even tell which parapet was mine. I'm so far down. No one pursues. See my fate in your bones now, shaman. Then the wind wails behind me. I turn around to face the city, cupping my eyes against the sun. It winks off the distant loch. Must have been, oh, Jove, on high. 6 monsters rise from beneath the edge of the stone eagle wing, pale blue feathers, wingspans of 20 meters. Huge birds of prey with bodies of feathered lions wrapped in rune-laden pulse armor. Griffins. I run, because what else do you do? A missile of fur, feather and muscle hits the stone in front of me. I sprawl backward from amidst a cloud of spitting snow. The biggest damn thing I've ever seen uncoils her white mass. I've seen the monster once before as it devoured Euripides' Ovotum atop the dome of Endymion. It is God-eater, the albino steed of the Obsidian Queen, but no one rides in its saddle. The griffin's razor-scarred beak is the size of me. It opens to scream into my face as a mountain of a man lands in its shadow. My cilia wail. The man's armored boots are big, his tattooed arms like tree saplings and ringed with gold torques. His helmet is 3 times the size of a human head, made from the skull of an African sand hydra and plumed with green meter-long poison feathers of a Pacific archipelago jungle dragon. His pulse armor is battered and white, shoulders set with the skulls of the peerless warlords he killed with the man-sized great axe strapped to his back. The Reaper's greatest armored cavalry commander stomps toward me. The long valor tail of hair from which he gets his name falls down his back to his tailbone, sewn with trophies. I pick myself to my feet. To his people, he is big brother. To Goals, the sky bastard. To everyone else, Valdir the unshorn, warlord and royal concubine of Sephi the Quiet. Well, this isn't where I park my ship, I say up at him. Black eyes within the hollows of the Hydra's skull flick toward the mountain face and stone columns where I made my passage. Have you seen it? Shiny, long, 2 swollen engines at the stern, plenty of thrust. No reply. Listen, I was working with the Sovereign, your ally. Give her a call. I ain't saying I haven't made mistakes, just don't give me to Barker. I ain't earned that. Now he looks back at me. Earned? The voice filters through the sonic chamber of the Hydra, each decibel contorted. Well, I mean, I did go face down the whole syndicate. Ask the kids, either of them. I was pretty impressive. In the land of my mothers, those who steal children declare Ashvar, a holy war against the spirit of tribe, so their covetous Yontak are shorn from their bodies and cast into the fire, so their seed may not spread, but crackle pleasantly and share warmth with tribe. Children peck their eyes from their skulls with crow bones, so the no-men shall be at the mercy of the tribe from which they sought to steal. This is what you have earned.
Crow bones.
Well, that sounds insidious. Lucky for me, we're in Republic territory. If you would just call the Sov... He shoots me point blank in the chest with a tack net. It knocks the wind out of me and contracts. He drags the line to God-Eater's saddle and barks at the griffin. Riderless, it springs off the stone wing and into the winter air. Valdir flies beside it on grav boots, keening a savage song. I'm dragged beneath as we climb back to Eagle Rest, pissed beyond all belief. Last place I want to die is Mars. Chapter 23. Ephraim. Queen. Valdir's goons dump me unceremoniously onto the gravel. The tack net retracts, leaving patterns of duress on my skin. Griffin set down and Valkyrie women slip from the saddles. Male braves with red runes on their armour land beside them in steaming grav boots. One of them kicks my arse until I stand to my bare feet. They ache from my failed escape and the cold. Did I fracture them when I landed? Anyone got slippers? I ask. None pay me any mind. Fine, socks'll do. You got socks?
They do not like greys, Grania, especially the men. The braves were slave knights in your legions, or gladiators, or worse.
I turn toward the voice. Wrapped in his raven cloak, the shaman sits in the lap of a giant, headless statue, eating walnuts. Oh, you again. He slides down from the statue and wobbles toward me. Valdir barks something in Nagal at him to the effect of, "Try not to lose your idiot again, idiot." The shaman flaps his crow cloak at the warlord and covers his earholes. "You got any more slippers?" I ask him, tightening the fur coat around me for the chill. "Lost the last pair."
"Only a fool gives a gift when the first is valued so little," he says. "I told you your destiny was not out the window. Now you suffer."
"Yeah, well, I'm Hyperionin. We're natural skeptics." He tilts his big head and laughs.
"Maybe next time you are given something, you will value it."
He flicks walnut shells at my right leg. "You gave me this."
"Idea, not money." He touches his chest. "Osgard."
He points at me.
"Grania. It means..."
"Hold up. You're Osgard." He grins.
"Osgard the mad, Osgard the bad, Osgard the berry glad."
He bows. "You're not as blue as I expected."
"Berries only fall when gods dance," he says, glancing at Valdir.
"When do they dance?" I ask. He smiles.
"When blood spills. Worry not. Today for talking only."
Near God-Eater, Valdir has taken off his ridiculous helmet. The champion's face is unusually delicate for an obsidian. His nose is twice broken, his cheeks gaunt and freckled. But all the savagery can't hide the avian structure of his bones, the motes of silver in his black irises, his full, notched lips, and the haughty grandeur of the only human besides Darrow to have survived a duel with a minotaur. Got to admit, he's damn slick. Valdir barks at Osgard, this time motioning with his fingers, and we set off toward a large triumphal arch. The women lead and pay me no mind, but the trailing men catcall me and shove me with their axe hafts when I slow. The path ascends up the spine of the mountain. My raw right foot is yet without calluses, and it's agony on the stone. "What's this all about?" I ask Osgard, panting a little for the elevation.
"You will see."
He begins ticking off fingers as we walk. When he's reached his 12th, I curse. "By Juno's dilapidated tits." The path opens up to a damn impressive sight. Above Eagle Rest, the stone training squares of the Bellona Ludus rib the mountainside, the highest disappearing into the clouds. Where once generations of genetically modified fascist knights trained in the arts of subjugation and extermination, now thousands of obsidian youths practice calisthenics, climbing courses, and weapons training. We make for a lower training square, where a huge crowd of warriors and older students have gathered amongst broken statues. A lone crest of dirty blonde hair moves amongst the white manes. Two trios duel as teams on the training square. Electra, fighting in sync with her trio, is dismantling an obsidian who must have her by 50 kilos. The lad looks as young as you can look, while still having a full beard. It's coated in blood from a nose smashed flat. They wield traditional Aurochs femur practice staves. The opposing group seems to be trying to reach a large skull in the centre of the training square, while Electra's lot defend. Valdir holds us up out of respect for the bout. The Obsidians murmur amongst themselves, unable to pass up a wager on blood sport. I've seen kids fight before. It's a bit like drunks fighting underwater. Electra's like that, except switch out the water and put in an elastic rubber room, a human-sized needle, and flick it. Yet, for all her mania, she fights as part of her group, switching opponents, using her own allies to guard her blind spots as she strikes. The instructor calls the fight when the last man-boy of the opposing trio stumbles back from a stave to the temple that makes him all soupy. Electra doesn't pursue. Electra and her wing women help the fallen up. All six bare their throats to the instructor, a lithe young obsidian woman with a topknot and black scoogie runes on her face, and to another in the crowd before jogging to sit with other students around the square. The little demon Electra looks right at home. "Children of the tribe are hard," Osgard murmurs to me. "Sent back to ice to learn our ways. Hunt many days, fight with axe from 6 summers to death. Yet Valdir could not put boy and girl with children of tribe. Their spirits are those of wolves." "Boy's all right, girl's straight psycho. It's in the blood." Osgard makes a small sound of disagreement.
"The lesson is called the 3 seasons. Do you know this?"
I shake my head.
3 seasons of war exist. Wind, fire and ash. Pride, possession, annihilation. Freyhild."
"The one who cut off all those syndicate balls?"
"Yes,"
he gestures to the young instructor.
"She gave secret order to attacker. Sweep enemy from square, reach skull, or destroy enemy. Girl saw them advance for skull. Girl listened. She became ice, and the enemy wing in the end accepted it was her wing's skull. Ownership was respected. A balance found. This pleases the queen."
I follow his eyes to a patch of grass spotted with snow. I've never seen Sephi the Quiet in person. She looks almost inanimate as she sits amongst her Valkyrie on the knoll. All legs and arms. No contained kinetic violence like the Golds, who always seem a hair trigger away from atomic. Only a subdued, sleepy grandeur. Like one of the statues that surround the training square. Her shoulders are broad but bony under a fantastic high-collared white cloak with a blue fur collar. Her right hand is gloved. A crown of what looks like ice sits on her head. She watches intensely as a new batch takes the square, sparing a long look for Valdir, who tilts his chin upward toward his mate. Pax is amongst the new batch. I trace the monsters he's supposed to fight. It's not just the size difference that worries me for the more sensitive of the two gold spawn. It's muscular development. Shy of puberty, Pax isn't yet the man he'll become. Though his bare calves do look more sculpted than's right for a boy, the obsidians are already giants. The three opponents take their places in a triangle and receive their order from Freyhild. Pax's crew form together around their skull, not yet knowing their enemy's intent. Pax seems uninterested. "That's a trillion credit skull you're about to let those goons crack," I say. Osgard examines me.
You care about boy. Warmth still in your stone heart. This is good.
It's not a bloody marriage. He's just my meal ticket, but he ain't like the other one.
No, she is better fighter. He is more dangerous human. I warned Queen. He will refuse lesson this time. Rage festers inside. Watch.
The obsidians bellow a war challenge, which Osgard says is a season of wind. Their intent is to sweep Pax's crew from the square to show their valour. As Pax's wingmen move to the centre, he separates and stands on the very edge of the square. The three enemy don't chase him. They use their numbers to drive his wingmen back and off the square. Then all three come for Pax in a V. As soon as they are in striking range, Pax steps out. The veteran warriors watching howl in condemnation. Pax's enemies declare victory and spurn his cowardice by turning their backs on him. He steps back into the square. Only Valdir smiles. What follows is appalling. Not the violence itself, but its tone of boredom and clinical cruelty. Crack! The sound of femur on skull rattles the training square. One of the obsidians teeters sideways. The other two brutes wheel around to fight Pax. He silently deconstructs them. He's slower than Electra and almost looks asleep, but every movement is like part of a dance. As if he's seen this all happen before and must bore himself and mock the obsidians by going through the motions. He doesn't need to, but he collapses the kneecap of one of the older boys and then cracks his skull with a sweep of the stave. As he spins out of the movement, I see his eyes were closed. The other brings his stave down in a diagonal downward strike at Pax's head. Pax falls flat on his back. The stave strikes the ground and shatters. Pax grabs the obsidian's ankle, pulls himself between the obsidian's legs, flips around him, ends up on the obsidian's back, and brings his hand down on the obsidian's neck. Somehow, he grabbed a shard from the obsidian's broken stave and buried it 2 fingers deep in his neck.
"Do not move," Pax says. "The bone is 2 millimeters from your carotid artery."
The obsidian's eyes widen. He goes very still. Pax slides from his back. The watching warriors are disgusted. Not one has moved, not even the instructor. Pax turns to Sephi.
"You mock us?" Sephi asks in a quiet voice. "It was the season of wind, not ash." "Mock? No, Your Majesty. I understand the purpose is to instruct me in the old ways of the obsidian."
He points at Osgard, somehow noticing his arrival.
"Your shaman teaches the children of the ice that war is the first language of all peoples. But not every war need be the last. As a child, I am to be impressed with your wisdom. As hostage, I am to be convinced by inclusion in your tribal rites that I am an ally. As ward, I am to impart this lesson upon my own people. To be friend of the obsidians, who showed me their sacred rituals and treated me with respect. What pity is it that there will be no obsidians left?"
The braves stand at this insult. Not rising to the insult itself, Valdir watches the reactions of his fellows with careful consideration. So he's a thinking monster. Rather handsome, too, if you can get over the batwing ears.
"Gods forbid I insult your pride," Pax crows. "I wonder you have any left. If you still think war is a dialogue, allow me to remind you the goals of the core do not believe you are human beings. You are cattle. They treated the seasons of war so the tribes would be locked in eternal strife. They did not want their herd culled. They wanted it honed to better wage their wars.
From the crib, the children of peerless Skard are now raised to know one truth. War is not for pride or for land. War is for extermination. Valdir the Unshorn knows this. He served beside Ragnar's father, Palehorse, as a slave knight in the Grimmer's legions, then beside my father and Ragnar, who put the razor in his hand. Many of your blood braves have seen this in their service. Never has it been more evident than upon Mercury, where my father faces atomic annihilation. So the red prick ended up back on Mercury. Must have been a gold counterattack. Is he still a fugitive? But you, scurrilous lot, you hide from that truth behind tradition. You abdicate oaths to feign wisdom. There is no wisdom in the company of deserters. There is only shame. You left your morning star to face your common enemy alone. But do not fret. His grin is the nasty sort I didn't know he had in him. It will be short-lived when the engines of doom kill my father and arrive on Mars to chase even the oathbreakers to their graves. Make no mistake, Sephi, queen of the Obsidians, this is no war of wind or fire. He gestures to the dismantled obsidian youth around him, with pity to the one holding the bone fragment in his neck. This is a war of annihilation, and you are outmatched by the darker breed of my kind. I am the son of the Morning Star, the flesh and blood of the man who broke your chains. Yet you hold Electra and me as insurance, and to bargain for ships and information. So I look upon you with my father's eyes to ask, what do your old ways say of honour? He drops the femur and walks out, leaving the obsidians in stony silence. Damn, son. I scratch my leg, remembering what an idiot I was at his age. Electra rushes to catch up to Pax. Sephi watches them go and signals their guards to follow. But the accusations Pax made remain in his wake. All is not well in the war bands of the Obsidian host. Talk about a guilt trip.
Yes, he is precocious,
Osgard murmurs, clearly disagreeing with Pax. Oddly, Valdir does not. His eyes watch Pax with something like sorrow, and when he marches down to meet his queen, it is as if the weight of 10 worlds were on his shoulders. His anxiety evaporates only when he passes by the instructor Freyhild. She takes pains not to meet his eyes. She is a pretty young thing, lithe instead of muscular, without the hirsute appearance so common in her people. File that one away for later. I am led down to Sephi. Despite just being dressed down by a prepubescent plutocrat, she is more impressive than her reputation, and it is a colossal reputation. Warlord, gold killer, hero of the Rat War, sister of the demigod Ragnar Volaris, queen of the Obsidians. She's not barbarically handsome like Valdir, or lively like Freyhild. Instead, she's a cold fusion between worlds. A horizontal iron bar punctures her nose at the bridge, even as a cochlear implant blinks in her ear. Astral runes mark the shaved sides of her head. A datapad is embedded in her left forearm. Her eyes are large black marbles, but in the right light show fibres of optic implants. A second set of blue eyes are tattooed on her eyelids. 14 long, heavy knuckle fingers fold together in her lap, stroking her valor tail. And then I see the weapon she wears, the inert blade of the razor that punched through Trigg's chest 10 years ago is coiled around the long leather glove that reaches up to the elbow. The same blade that killed her brother, Ragnar. I blink like a dumb black-tooth addict. Thought Barker owned Ajar's blade. Valdir kneels before his mate and bares his throat before announcing me and stepping to the side. Seffi raises an eyebrow at my bloody feet and knees.
He is guest, Valdir.
He dressed himself while falling out a window. Climb in gracefully, I correct. Niagahe, Skati, I say to Seffi, baring my throat in respect and submission. Valdir is shocked I know any Nagal. Seffi is not surprised. She accepts my respect with an open palm to show she holds no weapon against me.
Niagahiagra, hia ganga ni hala.
She nods to the white who stands behind her clutch of Valkyrie.
Xenophon said you knew our ways. Fotahail.
Sorry, Nagal's a little rusty.
Lim is healthy?
Seems like. I wiggle the appendage. Surprise you sprung for flesh tech, not cheap. Suppose I should thank you for that.
It is a gift,
she shrugs.
My court is large from long war. I welcome all, including you, Scarhunter.
She says the title fondly and tilts her head.
Your body wanted death. Your heart is not pure. It became silent 3 times. Narcotics weakness.
Valdir makes a sound of disgust and lies down on the ground beside his mate to comb his hair. He looks like a bloody Frankish painting.
Valdir thinks you are stupid to use Zoladon?
He is stupid, Valdir says. Seffi sets a hand on his shoulder.
He thinks that I am stupid to waste wind on you.
She spares a smile for Osgard.
But I know weakness in your kind does not mean broken. So tell me, why kill passions with Zoladon?
I glance at Azure's razor.
Makes slice flow a bit smoother. Poor little man,
she mocks.
Life is meant to be felt, else why live? Valleys make the mountains.
I nod to Osgard, who has strayed back to the training square to examine the blood on the stone. That fellow right there is high as a cloud. He seems to be living just fine.
Fool's comparison. God's bread fills warrior with heat of gods. Spirit berry opens mind. Let's one hear Aesir. Zoladon makes warrior cold, narrows mind, makes machine man vile.
And fever cloud, I ask. Your berserkers love that. Her face darkens.
Berserkers are no more. Fever is an evil I do not accept. It makes men savages. We are not savages.
The only other colour on the knoll beside obsidian is a lean white in midnight robes. It's a logos. I thought they were all killed by lynch mobs. Bald, childish of face, the white could be 30 or 80 years old. You never can tell. Their skin is the colour of raw chicken, their eyes the colour of milk. A large diamond is embedded between the eyes to signify their class. If anyone's on a permanent Zoladon high, it's that mammalian computer. I don't point out the hypocrisy.
With Spirit Berry, Osgard sees God's hand upon your shoulder,
Seffi continues.
He is responsible for the breath you draw. You crashed in a scrapland. Scavengers found you. There were brothers of the ice amongst them. They are known to Osgard and offered you to me.
Well, that's a turn. And the wee warlords must have cost you a fortune to outbid the sovereign.
My respect was payment enough to them.
Syndicate must have loved that.
They attempted to substantiate their claim,
the White says. The Unshorn disabused them of that notion. Whatever malice Valdir Unshorn feels for Osgard, he seems to trust the White. He nods to the advisor like an old friend. So if the kids are your hostages and we're here, I murmur.
Wards?
Seffi corrects. Sure. Then I take it to mean I'm not on Barker's menu?
Why would we fix you to kill you?
That would waste money.
You have not hurt All Tribe.
I completely agree, but ain't you allies with the Sovereign and House Barker? I've never heard of the term All Tribe before, but one thing at a time. Hell, till that kid started talking, I thought you were still the Reaper's heavy air cav.
By glancing around at the faces of her warriors, I can tell that's old news, but still raw, particularly for the males.
World changes fast. Was it Wolfgar's death, or something else? If they aren't allies, then my errand for the Sovereign has probably been perceived as a double cross, which means Volga is likely dead back on Luna. I need Zolodone. The ache inside nearly makes the knees buckle. So I'm thinking I'm alive for a reason, I say. It ain't gratitude for this little boon. It ain't fidelity for an old scar hunter. I've been thoroughly reminded what you lot do to thieves. I glance at Valdir. So maybe tell me what this is all about.
Seffi surprises me by standing. Come, Mr. Horn. There is something I would like to show you.
Seffi leads me from the training ludus through hangars that once held Bellona Warcraft. Within the stone caverns, a nation of people is set to one industry, knowledge. Obsidian youths labor beside old women, young men, war-tested braves, learning skills that 10 years ago were forbidden to them under pain of liquidation. They study under orange master mechanics, blue navigators, mapping astral trajectories, and training in flight simulators. They work with green coders, yellow doctors, and red builders. It's an odd sight. Seffi says nothing as we walk, and by the time we end our little tour in another garden of broken Bellona statues, my head is full, my eyes are struggling to stay narrowed in contempt, and my bare feet ache like hell. Seffi gestures for me to sit at a long table set for two. Pale faces marked with black runes watch from the shadows of the garden. Skugi. A chill goes down my spine as I sit down. The spirit assassins. Valdir's eyes linger on them before he sits on the rubble of a statue. The chair is a relief for my leg. A bowl of warm water filled with black flowers is brought for my feet by a stunning pink servant. I sigh as I dip my feet in, and feeling returns to them, along with a peculiar tingling that must be from the flowers. Osgard murmurs there is night gaze in the water before wandering to the garden. Night is coming. The sun ebbs in the sky. Battered Olympia sulks beneath Eagle Rest, toward Loch Esmeralda, like a centurion's wet cape, and I sit with a queen.
You're breaking with the Republic, I say, tightening my fur coat.
That's what you mean by All Tribe.
She says nothing.
You already united Obsidians in war, promising them a homeland, didn't you? Looks like you found one.
I glance down at Olympia, but Seffi's eyes are on the horizon beyond. That's trouble.
On the ice, when a limb is sick, it is cut away to save the body. The Republic rots from inside with weakness, like you, before we cured you. My people must prosper. This is the burden my brother set upon me. To prosper, we must become one tribe. So I will found a kingdom for my people, for all Obsidians. Volkland,
her Valkyrie whisper, rattling their talks at the holy word. I begin to laugh, first the reds, now the cold-bloods.
From his seat at the base of a statue, Valdir pulls his axe.
He does not mock me, Valdir, Seffi says. He mocks life, Is that not right, Mr. Horn?
Close enough. You're buying yourself another war. We know war, Valdir says in dismissal. With your old pal the Reaper? I ask, causing him to stand up. Ask Gold how fun that is.
Valdir is a warrior, honest and proud, Seffi says, waving her mate down.
Valdir simmers in discontent, and I don't think it's just aimed at me.
He speaks truth, because he lives true. We know war, but it is not all we know or will know. 7 centuries, they say, kill, so we kill. 7 centuries, they say, send sons to stars, so we send sons. Republic says we are free, then Senate says obey, send sons and daughters to stars, kill for us, die for us. We ask only for homeland, they give rocky islands on earth. We ask for city, because we are not savages who want to fish all day.
She waves at Eagle Rest and Olympia.
They give broken ruins and say be satisfied. What is there for us on Mercury? We cannot live under weight of sun. We are hated there. So now we say the word Ragnar taught us. No. Now we embrace the truth Morningstar taught us. Destiny is not given. Destiny is taken.
So much for Seffi the Quiet. I look for Osgard. I wonder if it was this destiny he saw in the bones of a fire, as he claims to have seen mine. I find him climbing a tree toward an owl's nest.
Fitting.
I sigh. What do you need me to steal? Come on, you don't have to butter me up. Not feeling very masculine with my feet in the little bowl of water, I slap my leg. Call in your debt. Seffi remains quiet as the slender pink now brings a bottle of wine. He shows her the seal to prove it hasn't been tampered with, and pours it into 3 golden goblets.
Thank you, Amel, Seffi says.
The white Logos steps forward to sip the wine, swishes it in his mouth, swallows, and nods as it detects no pathogens. Straight eerie Logos shit. Even arbiters like Oslo, my Ophian Guild contact, are wary of Logos. They're null as a doll down below, and on a permanent Zolodone high. Only the richest Gauls could afford them for trophies. It seems Seffi collects rare creatures and rare wine. She sniffs the wine in her goblet. What do you want me to steal? I repeat as she takes a sip. She looks both insulted and mildly amused by my tone. How long since anyone's had the guts to give her lip when she's got men like Valdir by the balls?
Of all the words in common, do you know my favourite? She asks.
Jove on high. Destiny? Voluble? Captive audience? She leans forward.
Practical. Nagal is the superior language to common. It conveys the soul better and has more beautiful words. Weldschmer. The pain in discovering the world fails to fulfill expectation. Fenwer. The longing to be somewhere else. But we have no word for practical, only honourable or shameful.
Her eyes look through me.
You are this way. I need practical men. As master mechanics teach our lame and weak, as blues teach our small and bright, you will teach my Skugi.
She makes a clicking sound, and Freyhild, the instructor from the training, steps from the shadows of the garden along with several other Skugi. They're all young, but none are beautiful like Freyhild. Her face, though tattooed with subtle black markings, is unscarred. Her cheekbones are sharp, her eyes slanted, and as close to dark blue as obsidian black. All the Skugi are more slender than Valdir or the brutish Valkyrie, more like deer than elk. Freyhild even has the eyelashes of a deer. Valdir notices too, don't you, boy? Teach them what exactly? I ask. I'm no assassin. They're the best. We are not, Freyhild says in a slow, mocking voice. The Howlers and Gorgon are the best. It is truth. Good thing you kept one of them as allies, eh? Freyhild is amused.
My Skugi are orphans from ruins of shattered tribes, Seffi says. They promise their spirits to their queen. Their loyalty is beyond the flesh, so their wombs are stripped. Their seed made infertile by my shaman. But do you know why my Skugi are not the best?
She motions for Freyhild to step back.
Not because we do not know how to walk with the silent shadow or bring the long death, but because Howlers and Gorgons are more than assassins. My Skugi are not. They provide one solution, death. Practical creatures provide many solutions. For Red Hand death works. Skugi have hunted them these last weeks. 6,000 they have killed for me. Red Hand flees. The Republic was too soft on them. Soon they will be no more. But I will need my Skugi to beat the Gorgons, to beat the Howlers if necessary. Teach them to be freelancers, to melt into city, to exist behind enemy lines, to gain allies, to sow discord.
She points a long finger of a gloved hand at me.
You stole the sovereign's child. You will give us your knowledge.
If she wants a kingdom, she knows she'll have to play dirty, like all the rest. With a grunt, Valdir bursts to his feet and stalks away. Seffi watches him go with a strange expression.
My mate believes we are mistaken to leave the Reaper. He does not wish us to change or practice shameful arts. But he is just a man. Men are impulsive and blinded by the snake between their legs.
Won't argue that. Then I say, with narrowed eyes, Skugi are sacred to your people, servants of All-Mother Death, yes? Valdir won't be the only one pissed. Your braves know it might have been gold that held the chain, but grey was the chain. You ate us even more than you ate them. She makes a dismissive motion. Your Majesty, I've seen berserkers rape wounded legionnaires on the battlefield as they scalp them. Your berserkers. I don't have any loyalty to the Legion, but those Greys were my people. Gold might be scariest. You might be biggest. Red might be toughest. Grey, we got the longest memory. The idea of teaching the Skugi to become even more effective makes me nauseous. This is selling my soul in a way I never considered.
That world is past. Not all of the clans believe as I do. They resist change, but they follow strength. I am strength.
Seffi runs a long finger over the rim of her wine cup.
You are cunning. You made fool of Lionheart and the Fox Lords. I want that cunning. I know how this world works. I am willing to make you a very rich man.
And if I say no?
You are guest. When safe, you will be free.
Free to be tossed off a high cliff by Valdir, more like.
But a man on his own is nothing. You will be hunted by Syndicate, Julii, Lion, Republic, Goblin. You will be no man, no half, no blood, no Aeta, no hands to carry your cold body to the sky when they find you?
Cat's got nothing on me. I lean forward with a feline grin. I got 1,000 lives. They can each have one. Anyway, Mars is for suckers. I got business on Luna.
You speak of your woman?
Her eyes glimmer as I flinch.
Volga Fjorgen is on Luna no longer. Xenophon?
The white steps forward.
6 weeks ago, 2 known members of the Horn Gang were abducted from Augustan property and are currently on Phobos, pending transfer to Mars.
I glance up at the twin moons moving over the city. Nah. Citadel is impenetrable. Places crawling with heavies, tech even I've never seen. The Minotaur got chewed up with a full century of peerless, real peerless. I squint at them. They don't look like they are capable of bluffing.
Who?
The Julii, the white says. She doesn't have the skill set.
But she has something better. Money,
Seffi replies.
Xenophon explains. Ignorant of Virginia's deal with you, she employed the freelancer known as the Figment to collect your gang members as leverage against you, after frontal confrontation with the Sovereign promised to escalate.
That's psycho. A chill goes through me, but it makes sense. Birds of a feather and all that. I squint at Seffi.
You said 2. Who's the extra?
The red, Xenophon replies. Your inside woman.
Lyria?
Lyria of bloody damn Largolos?
I can't even laugh. I thought she was a cooked little rabbit. I lean back over the railing, mind whirling like a Rubicon wheel. Get out, old boy. Save your precious skin while you can. But this voice is quieter without the Z. Lyria of Largolos and Volga Fjorgen, alive after all. And above Mars. What a thing. That settles it. Even if I pretend it doesn't. Of course I have to throw a fit first, but I'd have had to agree anyway just to survive the meeting. Now I actually might stick around till I get what I need.
How do you know they're alive? I ask.
If the Julii took them.
A holo appears in Seffi's long hand. It is of a cell.
Inside, Volga rocks back and forth. The poor girl. I see her smiling on race day in Hyperion, laughing at the bar, offering me a cocktail. She was just a kid when I pulled her in. I was all she had. But she didn't have me. Not really. I bite my tongue bloody so I don't belt out into tears. Without the Z-valve, it's all so much. Her image flickers away. The cold bitch queen stares at me.
The Julii does not waste resources. I told her I would pay her for their release. If you pledge fealty to me, they are yours.
Don't do it, old boy. She's going to die bad. Dreamers all do, don't you know? But some greater, hungrier part of me scrambles after this new flicker of hope. Volga. I'm going to save you, Snowball. Treat you like the queen you are.
What's the Julii paying you for the kids?
I ask, trying to distract myself and them. Got to be a big nut.
That is not your concern, Seffi says. Your answer?
Time seems to thicken. I find myself nodding. No fealty, I say. I'm no one's dog, and I'm sure as Hades not dying on Mars. You draw up a contract with Amani Gill Specs. Xenophon produces a holo document from a data pad and flicks it to the table. Seffi smiles. She knows who she's doing business with, clever girl. I glance through it. It's Amani Gill Specs, all right, not some savage blood oath. Maybe the world is changing. Seffi sips her wine as I eye the particulars. 3-year sunset clause. Contract void if I take Zolodone. What is it with everyone? Recognition of Skoogie death mark on my life if I skip out? That's fun and probable. I breeze to the remuneration and feel my toes tingle. The girls in 6 weeks, a quarter kilo of grade A diamonds in a Martian month, a ship with the deed, a signing bonus of 25 million credits. Fuck me. They're overpaying by kilometre. I want the girls on signature. No, Xenophon says predictably. You are a flight risk. Then double the monthly salary. A half kilo plus expenses. Gonna be killing my neutral reputation throwing my lot in with black ops spirit killers, and my girls need retirement money. The white begins to say no, but I cut it off. Listen, Milky, you're the one with the scarcity problem. Fix my leg up, spared me from the howlers. You need me for something you can't do, and I'm betting it ain't just teaching Scoogie. None of them react, but that's not saying much for these folk. You can't move your army from Earth without showing your cards. I get it. But that means something's coming. You'll tell me when I need to know. That's fine. But I'm getting hazard pay, because I'm sure it's going to be manic.
You think highly of your talents, Mr. Horn, Seffi says. Or very little of your life.
Now it's 1 kilo. Want to go for 2? I put my hand out for the kill. Seffi's entourage tenses at the insult. Even gibbering black teeth know obsidian rules of contact. But then she surprises me. My hand disappears beneath her 7 gloved fingers.
To a fruitful endeavour, she says.
One more task. The Reaper's boy is fond of you. He resists us. Bring him close. We may need insurance. Sure, yeah, whatever. I grin as she releases my hand. I got you, Snowball. Just hold on, and I got you. Chapter 24. Ephraim. Scoogie. Listen up and listen good, I say, just like my Tessarias did half a life ago. 200 black-eyed assassins watch me inside the empty hangar with suspicion. Taken from the remnants of tribes shattered by gold after Seffi joined the Rising and formed into one of the most feared assassin groups in the war, they're all prime specimens, and not one of this Scoogie band is over 30. Some, like their leader, Freyhild, are barely taller than I am. Others are built like tree stumps. Others taller even than Ragnar Volaris. Others spindly and clever-faced. Each wears their bone-white hair in a topknot and a pale blue sleeveless tunic with the all-tribes winged crest tattooed in black on either shoulder. Those will have to go. My name is Ephraim T. Horn, and I was once considered the 3rd best freelancer in Hyperion, which means I was the 3rd best freelancer alive. 2 months ago, I became the best. Those rumours you've heard, they're true. I stole the heir of the Reaper and the Sovereign, and the hell-spawn of the Goblin and Victra Audulii. And I stole them twice, with nothing but a red, a green, and an obsidian. Oh, and the second time, I did it solo. They're sceptical. Good. They take their cues from Freyhild, who looks at me as I'd look at Volga, trying to teach me how to use a coffee maker. I glance at Osgard, who stands beside me, nodding along, as if I spoke the greatest wisdom ever known. Since my fateful meeting with Seffi, he's shadowed me like a somnolent ghost, eating walnuts, sleeping outside my door, and sometimes in my room, with absolutely zero understanding of personal space, private property, or hygiene. Somewhere in that time, he claims to be teaching Pax and Electra the ways of the obsidian, but frankly, I doubt it. I know drug addicts, and he smacks of one. Now, you lot have done some killing. You know that business. You've fallen in rains, stormed breaches, killed gulls and a whole lot of people that look just like me. You know asymmetrical warfare, direct action, and reconnaissance, like the top of your bleached pubes. But your natural talents are not enough. Your queen is of a mind that the world is changing and you must change with it. Freyhild yawns. I jab a finger at her. You! What's the best way to take out a kill squad of fully armoured gold? When they stop to piss, she answers. There's laughter. Wrong. With a high-powered neodymium magnet. That would not kill them, she says. Killing ain't your mission anymore. Your queen wants a kingdom, so she needs operators focused on the mission, not the kill. EMP would be better, Freyhild says. Wrong, moron, I say, irritating her savage sensibilities. Unless it's nuclear-powered, you ain't gonna do shit to that new armor. You're 2 years late. If you're not reading mechanical specs, you're not doing your job. When was the last time you read a spec report, Scoogie? Freyhild doesn't answer. Thought so. I will teach you unconventional domestic warfare. Soak Legion spycraft, surveillance, counter-surveillance, how to dance a laser grid, subvert security systems, foster insurrection on enemy soil, groom assets of every colour without beating them to a pulp, talk about anything for 10 minutes, use neodymium magnets, hotwire anything with an engine, manipulate anything with a prick or gash, and how to do it all without any...